podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
And it's the Coach Home, and it's John Gibbons hosting this week. And I'm again joined by three fans from up and down the country who are going to get their perspective from the stands on what happened to them this weekend. Then we're going to start on a positive note with Freddie from the Ugly Inside podcast, who's going to talk to us about a routine win, Freddie, which must be nice to kind of discuss in a season that's had its ups and downs and for a while looked like it was going to be precarious to just turn up on a Saturday, watch a nice little 2-0 that takes you 10 points clear of the relegation zone. It must have been quite nice.
Yeah, strange sensation to come away of St. Mary's with an outbreak of happiness, you know, two goals. I guess we'll talk about Shane Long on how he scored later on, but crikey, that's something X-rated, I tell you. But 2-0, comfortable victory, clean sheet, not much to complain about, and now we're looking up table rather than down it over our shoulder.
Yeah, which is a nice position to be in. Southampton at 12th. I think they were 12th kind of before the kickoff, but obviously in a nicer position now. And as you say, looking up kind of rather than down, which we always kind of, a lot of us felt Southampton, you know, we'll be doing so this season, and there was a bit of a surprise sort of outside how they were struggling. But I guess, you know, those terrible results, not least that awful kind of 9-0, seem very much behind this side now.
Literally, we can't go a conversation about somebody mentioning that result in October. but I mean, it's such a turnaround, such a transformation. And I'm sure I mentioned it to your colleagues last week, you know, to give credit to the board where we stuck in and backed the manager. And well, you know, the players are now playing in a system which they understand. You know, we saw too many chopping and changing of shapes and different formations and different kind of triggers at the start of the season. That's where we would find ourselves a little bit adrift, and it was all looking rather bleak in October. But the festive period, picking up so many points, you know, winning away from home, although our home form has been something to be desired this season, and hopefully this win at the weekend over Aston Villa, it's opened up a gap and now opened up, hopefully breathing us a bit of confidence to the home support.
Another positive from the weekend was Will Smallbone, who's obviously academy. Well, I say obviously, people might not know him. He's an academy graduate. I mean, Southampton's academy is world renowned. The players that have been produced over the years. This is another one who you've managed to get through to the first team, and from all accounts, did very well.
Yeah, I think a composed performance, professional performance in the middle of midfield at the weekend. You know, to be honest, I think it was probably a smart move from Ralph to select Smallbone. And, you know, he's been making waves in the under-23s this season, scoring a few goals, becoming that sort of playmaker that's in the middle, what the heart of the midfield needs. And, you know, he's also made a couple of appearances in the FA Cup this season, played against and scored it on his sort of first ever debut against Huddersfield at the start of January in the FA Cup. And to follow it up with a Premier League debut, which anybody could be proud of. And hopefully it's a chance that Smallbone could be able to, you know, pitch his place into the first team, albeit with sort of a few injuries here and there, where Ward-Prowse has made a makeshift right back once again, but he kept Grealish quiet. But Smallbone, you know, played some excellent passes across the field, knew when to release the ball, and I think that's partly why Ralph selected him, is that he releases the ball quickly rather than sort of having a look at Romeo, who takes half a dozen touches trying to pass it sideways.
I mean, the manager sort of said afterwards that it's good for him and for every young player at the club, and I think that is worth reminding, isn't it, the boost to academies, things like this does. So it's not just, you know, I mean, the lad will be delighted, obviously, to get his first Premier League game and to be as composed as you said he was. But generally speaking, you know, all the boys, his teammates, normal teammates of the 23s would have been watching it, would have been hoping he does well, because it's positive for everyone, that, isn't it? When someone comes in and does look as composed as you said, it gives everyone a boost, but also a reminder to managers kind of up and down the country, if you like, that these lads are there, and if you're giving them a chance, they might surprise you.
Yeah, and I think perhaps the quality has kind of halted or faltered over the last sort of 9 months or so. We saw so many players break through from the under-23s last season. Ralph was willing to give anybody a chance. I think we saw 5 or 6 academy graduates to make their debut in various competitions. And this season it's been quite dry. Smallbone and sort of Jake Vokens have been the only youngsters to break through into the first team. We've not seen hardly anything from Jan Valley, who was the breakout star from last season only been at the club for sort of a year or two. But it, as you say, you know, it's a great opportunity and a great lift for the youngsters that are part of that under 23 setup to see their colleague, their teammate, you know, 20 years old, break into the first team. And, you know, hopefully Wall Smallbone has a long career ahead of him in a Saints shirt.
Okay, you said you wanted to talk about Shane Long, so let's do that. He's, you know, someone who's often talked about as a bit of a mystery, a striker who maybe doesn't get enough goals. He got the opener at the weekend.
Yeah, can we swear on this show?
I mean, yeah, it's why not?
So he finished with his dick. Let's put it that way. the match of the day commentary was quite diplomatic about it. Yeah, went off his six pack, but Shane Long, you know, gets his schlong on the end of things and he pokes it past the goalkeeper.
Yeah, he's a funny character, isn't he, Shane Long? Because you speak to professional footballers and they sort of say how highly they rate his, you know, his effort, kind of what he puts in, what he does for the team. And then all, I think there was an interview with a defender recently where I think he was asked sort of, you know, who his toughest opponent was in the Premier League, and I think, you know, someone was expecting, you know, what are sort of big names of football, you know, John Terry, if you like, and he's, you know, or whoever, no, sorry, forwards, you know, what are the great forwards he's played in the Premier League, and he said Shane Long was a nightmare, and said, you know, it was Mangala who was at Man City, and he said that, you know, I'd come from Spain, I'd never seen anything like Shane Long, you know, in his life, and how difficult he was to play against. I mean, he is an asset for the football team, even if, you know, you're still allowed to say he probably should score more.
Yeah, I mean, as a striker, it's part of their DNA to put the ball in the back of net and be selfish. But I guess Shane Long wasn't born that way. He's a totally selfless striker. You know, he holds up the ball, he's strong into the tackle, presses defenders into mistakes. You know, prime example of scoring the fastest goal in the Premier League history last season, closing down goalkeepers, holding off defenders, and laying off the ball and, you know, bringing others into play. And that's partly why perhaps Danny Ings has scored so many this season, yeah, because Shane Long's been so selfless in his approach. So he's a great asset to the side, and his contract is up in the summer. And I think he's doing his best to, you know, audition or at least give himself an extension for next season and on to the next year too.
Okay. In terms of, you mentioned looking forward and looking up, the nice few fixtures are fairly nice for Southampton. The next few games, you've got teams who are below you, West Ham away next Saturday. Then it's a home game against Newcastle and away at Norwich, who are obviously bottom. And I mean, you know, all the cliches about no easy games in the Premier League are true. But at the same time, those three games do give you a bit of an opportunity, don't you, to start looking upwards and saying, well, how high can Southampton finish this season?
Yeah, I mean, this I guess set of six fixtures, starting with the Burnley game. You know, Burnley, Aston Villa, West Ham, Newcastle, Norwich, or five fixtures there, and even Arsenal to some extent were all winnable fixtures. We've got Arsenal coming at home, you know, Norwich away, West Ham next week is a huge one for the Hammers too. I mean, that could well be sort of the Burnley of a couple of years ago. There may be protests around the ground, but we've just got to stay composed, you know, get as many points as possible. And I think, I'll be honest, you know, a win at the weekend's lifted everybody around us. We can see the finish line of 40 points. So get ourselves across the line. Perhaps we could have 6 points by the end of, you know, at sort of 5 o'clock by the time we finish against Newcastle. And that's our safety. That's 40 points. That's the cushion. And then the next target is then to finish as high as possible. So, as you say, cliche, but taking one step at a time. And the boys know what they need to do. And hopefully they will deliver.
Yeah, and do you think, you know, if they do deliver, which I think most people expected them to do now, and you get a decent finish, it'll be a season where you look back and think, as you say, you're pleased that the board, you know, stayed calm when I think others would have pulled the trigger because of, you know, pressures and twitchy fingers, I guess. But if you think it'll be seen as a season that actually we came through it, we show what we're about, we maybe learnt a little bit about each other, and there's kind of optimism to move on with this manager sort of next year and beyond.
Yeah, it was always going to be a building process for Ralph Hasenhüttl. You know, spent sort of the best part of 6 months really sort of shipping out Deadwood. He's been trying his best this season as well. We've still got half a dozen players that have been transferred in by previous regimes, and we're struggling to shift them. So I think we've got to. It's one step at a time, I think, for Ralph, and I think it's going to be a 4 or 5 year process. Of course, there will be sort of, you know, tabloids and gossip columns saying that Ralph is linked with this manager's post, et cetera, et cetera. But I think he's going to be here for the foreseeable future, at least sort of 4 or 5 years. I mean, we struggle to hang on to managers anything longer than 2.5 or 3 years, to be honest, because their heads are turned by bigger and more money. But I think Ralph's a humble bloke. You know, he keeps his feet firmly on the ground. And, you know, he's now got a team that's working for him, working hard for him. And he wants players that are buying into the process and are hungry and you know, willing to prove themselves under him and into the Premier League. I mean, we've got too many sort of egos, perhaps, that we're struggling to shift.
Huge thanks to Freddie for joining us. As always, from the Ugly Insider, do check out what they're up to. And now from Southampton, we're going up to Crystal Palace. I'm now joined on the line by Robbie Scotcher to discuss, I would say, a much-needed Crystal Palace win at the weekend, Robbie. Hadn't won in 2020 yet. Got off the mark with a home win. And, yeah, it just makes everyone, I would guess, feel a little bit calmer about everything.
Yeah, I mean, if we'd have lost that game, people would be thinking we're going to be dragged into it further. I mean, I still don't think we're completely out of the woods, because I think any of those teams are capable of putting a run together. But yeah, I mean, we desperately needed that win. And it was actually a really good team performance as well. Okay. It was only 1-0, but we should have scored more goals.
So a good performance as well, which must be kind of nice to see, really, because I think, you know, we might look at this and think, oh, well, Palace, you know, they lost the last three and have got, you know, 1-0 must have been kind of quite, you know, a nervy one or a scratchy one. But from the sounds of what you're saying is that they actually played pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it really was a good team performance. Newcastle were never really in it. And, yeah, I mean, we were passing the ball around more. We were closing the team down so that we don't know what we do. We seem to be playing on the front foot. We seem to be actually going for it a bit. Whereas, I mean, it's been quite a difficult season for us, really, because even when we've won a few games, we've not particularly played that well. And we've certainly not played well for like a whole game. It's been like a good second half, and that's been about it. And it's been one of those frustrating seasons. And it's weird. I mean, at one point, we were about 5 points away from sort of fifth in the transfer window coming up. We didn't buy anyone. Then we lost a load of games. We just, you know, had to get to that 40 points to stay up. It's been a really weird season for Palace.
Yeah, I mean, frustrating, I guess. But, I mean, it must kind of please yourself and other Palace fans to see that kind of effort still there and to see, you know, the energy and the performance kind of from the weekend. Obviously, it's led by Jordan Ayew, who always seems to kind of put a lot in whenever they see him. But, you know, it's when results aren't going for you, when maybe a transfer window comes and goes where the players might have been expecting to kind of someone to come in, you know, you can start feeling sorry for yourselves a little bit, but none of that seems to be the case at the weekend.
No, it wasn't like that at all. And you know, the ground felt rocking as well. It just felt like, okay, you know, and we've got a really good run of fixtures coming up against a lot of teams that are down there around us. And the last thing we wanted to do is go into the Brighton game next week, having lost at Newcastle, because needing something from that Brighton game, the derby sort of ramps it up anyway. And it's good to go into that game with a win behind us. This is the highest amount of points we've ever had in the Premier League after 27 games.
Is that right?
We've got 33 points. Yeah, this is the highest amount of points we've ever had. And in what seems to be quite an abject season. It's really random.
I think it's a reminder, though, isn't it, that sort of, you know, where Palace are and, you know, the battles that Palace always have. Because for me, you know, I'm saying, oh, Palace are an established Premier League club now. Do you know what I mean? They should be doing this, they should be doing that. But I mean, you know, your fact there is a reminder that kind of every season really is a battle for Palace in some senses. And, you know, if the crowd go and get that, then you get atmospheres like you do on the weekend where they think, you know, not just, oh, it's Newcastle at home, you know, we want to see us turn these over. It's, no, the players need us to kind of bring our best today and to hopefully get more out of them.
Oh yeah, definitely. Our fan base get quite. It's one of those things. Everyone saw Stoke years ago, and Stoke fans getting frustrated at kind of, you know, just winning 1-0, sitting mid table, and they wanted a bit more. And you know, they brought a few players in, they changed a few things up, and they ended up going down.
Yeah,
and I think we've got to be careful not to do exactly the same thing. You know, we are an established Premier League team. I think outside the top six, there's only two other teams that have been in the Premier League since we've been in it, so that haven't gone down and gone up again. It's changed a lot. And I think if you're below those six teams in a 10-year cycle, you stand quite a high chance of going down at some point. So it's kind of hard to know what is a good season. I mean, we went out early in the cup as well, so that was frustrating.
Yeah.
But a big home performance, because some of the performances have been pretty poor, pretty terrible. And, you know, you pay your money and you go along, and it gets frustrating when Roy decides to not go for it and, you know, try and only lose by one goal or something. So actually to turn up, see Palace play well, you know, the crowd get behind it. It was a really great Saturday. It's a really great Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Roy Hodgson there. He talked about the fact that there was a bit of a bounce in everyone's step this week, which is kind of nice to hear as well, and shows there's still the kind of that togetherness in the squad, because that's what's going to get you through, isn't it? And that's what kind of, you know, gets teams, as you say, to the magic 40 points mark and then beyond. And I was just talking to Freddie, who's a Southampton fan, and he would say the target's 40, then once you get 40, you think, well, where can we go from there? And it's still similar for Palace, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, the difference with us and Southampton have been playing some really great football. They've had a random season, losing 9-0, yeah, and then, you know, and then coming back from that. But they've been playing really good football. They've got Danny Ings banging the goals in. We've been getting the results, but without playing good football.
Right.
So that's what's been the main frustration, is the fact that even if you do win, it wasn't a 1-0 win like we've had before, where we've nicked a goal off some fluke, and then, you know, it's like literally the ball's not been doing anything that whole game, and there's nothing to get behind. For the first time in a while, it felt like we've got something to get behind as fans. You know, the ball's been passed around, people putting tackles in. Benteke was playing well, not in the box, but outside the box. You got Ayew running. It was something to actually get behind. And I think we haven't had enough of that this season.
Yeah, because it's a strange one with Palace, isn't it? Sorry, because, you know, you look at some of your results against the bigger teams. Obviously, you get the 2-2 away at Manchester City just after Christmas. There's a really good performance against Arsenal, which I remember kind of watching on the telly, that ends in a draw, but I thought Palace played well. And is it just more of a case of, you know, one week against a team who you should be beating at home, you want Palace, or everyone sort of wants Palace, just to kind of put them to the sword a little bit and just kind of, you know, show what is capable from this squad?
Yeah, I mean, don't forget we beat Man United at Old Trafford.
That was even earlier. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, that was your first win of the season, yeah, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Never forget to mention that at any point.
It'll always go down well on a Liverpool podcast, yeah.
Yeah, cool. But part of the frustrating thing is as well, because we've had a lot of injuries. We've had like quite a major injury crisis. So it's been quite a patchwork squad. So we haven't been at full throttle. We haven't had everyone available to go, right, we can really go for it. So we've been hanging on in there, to be honest with you. And I'm just hoping that we can get to that, you know, we get to that magical 40 points, hopefully sooner rather than later. And then, you know, we've got a load of youth players that should be able to now start coming into the first team. And they're good players, but because there's so much pressure to stay in the Premier League, it's difficult for a manager to risk bringing those players through.
Of course.
It's also, if when you've got a manager that is the age of Roy, part of the problem you're going to have is that he's looking for himself. He's obviously going to look out for the club, but he's not particularly invested in the next 5 years because he's not going to be it. So you're kind of, things are happening for the season, for the now. And what I'd like to see is, you know, we've got three games coming up. We've got away Brighton, home Watford, away Bournemouth. And which, by the way, what are my three most hated teams. I can't stand any of those teams. And if we happen to get, mainly because I sit next to a Watford fan, he's an idiot. But if we get enough points there, then, you know, we can blood some of those youngsters, hopefully. I know you get more money the more you go up each place, but it'd be great to see a couple of those youth lads come in and, you know, be given a chance.
I guess because that helps sort of, you know, almost build for the future, doesn't it? And if you've got a month at the end of the season or wherever it is where you're comfortable and you're able to start thinking about, you know, not just next season, I guess, but the next few and seeing which of these players, because, you know, we were, again, just talking to Freddie about a guy who made a Premier League debut for Southampton at the weekend and looked really composed and I think surprised a few people with, you know, not just his qualities, which do expect him, but, you know, how he looked like, you know, he belonged at that level. And sometimes you don't know until you give these lads a go, do you?
No, I mean, Wan-Bissaka is the prime example of that. he only came in because we didn't have enough players to actually play a training match. So they brought him over from the reserves and they said, you're going to come over and I'm sorry, mate, you've got to try and play right back. He'd never played right back before.
I didn't know
and
that.
And then he had to Mark Wilf. No, he'd never played right back before. He had to Mark Wilf and Wilf couldn't get round him in that session. Just went up to Roy and said, that's our right back. And then Roy put him in. And then, you know, the rest is history. He had a great end of that season, a great season for us, and we moved on. But it's happy accidents like that is what you need sometimes. Because there's just so much pressure to stay in the league. It's ridiculous. The amount of money we'd lose to go. And if you look at our squad as well, we've got an old squad. We've got players that, you know, aren't. I don't think they're necessarily up for the championship fight, which is a lot more games. It's just, you know, it's Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, literally the whole season. And I think if we did go down, we'd really struggle to get back up. It would take us quite a few years to rebuild. So to stay in the Premier League, having to, you know, we've got young players, but we've got to put Scott Dan in because we can rely on Scott Dan. We can't, you know, take a risk and see what the youngster could do playing next to Cahill. We've got to keep playing Benteke up top, even though we've got a couple of young strikers who, you know, they're banging goals in the under-23s, which we know isn't a great league. But it's kind of like it would be great to see some of those lads come on and, you know, get 20 minutes run out and see exactly what we've got at our academy.
Okay, thanks a lot to Robbie for joining us and being positive about Palace maybe for the future. You know, if some of these young lads can have a go, certainly. Yeah, thanks a lot to Robbie. And we're moving on, but we're staying in the South. And now we go to Brighton and to Alan Wares from the Albion Royal Radio Show. And Alan, it's another draw at the weekend, and it's a bit of a run of draws at the moment, but a battling one and a decent point.
I think, yeah, this is one of those where it's a point gained rather than 2 points lost. We played up at West Ham a couple of weeks ago, 2-0 down at half-time, lucky to have gotten nil, battled back, got three, in fact, could have won it. You think there's an argument to be said, point gained or 2 points lost that day. We played Watford last time, we were poor, Watford were poor, it wasn't a great game, definitely 2 points lost, but this one, Sheffield United, let's face it, who at the beginning of the season was going to see what they were going to do?
Yeah.
And here they are, top five side. And, you know, you're no longer your sort of plucky battling minnows of the Premier League. You know, they are, you know, of course, an excellent point. It's one of those at the beginning of the season where you're looking at Sheffield United to really gain your points down at the bottom of the table, but to get anything off Sheffield United at this stage of the season, I think is excellent for us.
Yeah, there was some sort of suggestion in the write-ups. Obviously, I've only seen the goals personally, but there was a bit of a suggestion, you know, in the write-ups that there was maybe a bit of a change of approach from the manager. I know he tried a few different formations, but the words pragmatic and things like that were used. Do you think that's fair?
I think it is. And Graham Potter does have many sort of tricks up his sleeve. I mean, I've said it before on the Raw, I've said it before on the Wrap, that I think that Graham Potter's biggest problem is the nature of the quality of the players he's got. He's got some very good players, but they really do need to, you know, they have to be sort of zing, zing, zing on their game. So when you're playing against Sheffield United, and let's face it, which teams actually would have ever known how to have set up against Sheffield United at the beginning of the season? And you think come halfway through the season, think they'd have sussed them by then. But, you know, they still do their job very well. So it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be sort of like this Premier League, greatest league in the world trademark thing that it's going to be. It's going to be something a little more 1980s, let's say. But, that in itself is unfair on thinking of when you think of 1980s football. It's just that what you're not going to get. Let's put it this way, if Sheffield United try to play some amazing football that Liverpool do, they're going to get undone. So they play to their strengths. And it's just that playing to their strengths means that everyone else has got to worry about how they're going to play to, you know, them against Sheffield United. So, you know, if Potter, Graham Potter can change his team that much that he can get a battling point out of it, then yes, that's what I'd say is kind of a good pragmatic approach.
Yeah, and it's a sign of a good manager as well, isn't it? I think because he's had praise for some of the football that the Brighton have played sort of quite rightly. Yeah, I think it was a bit sort of unfairly written off, sort of, you know, in general kind of Premier League circles, someone who didn't know too much about, but he's had praise for some of the football and, to be fair, the results kind of throughout the season. But to have that ability to not just, you know, choose a different way of playing, but also to get the players to buy into it and also to get the players to go, well, this is how we're going to approach this game is important, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the point. Potter arrived as a bit of an unknown himself at the beginning of the season. You know, we know he'd done quite well with Swansea on a shoestring. Good for him. And he brought Ostersund up from nothing to everything in Sweden. So, there was some pedigree there, but nothing like Test at Premier League level. So when it gets to the beginning of the season, we're seeing, and I think also slightly unfairly maybe, we're comparing the style of Chris Hughton from the previous season. You know, there's a little bit of a breath of fresh air, and people are prepared to give him that bit more of a chance. Now, the point is that we're still not winning games. We're playing a lot better football, and people are starting panicking again. And we're getting back to the whole notion of how football fans deal with their football clubs. And let's face it, we all know this. It happens just about everywhere. Football fans are just about some of the most fickle on the planet. And, you know, they'd rather see their team win ugly than draw beautifully, you know, because the whole notion, supposedly, it's all well and good, you know, us playing really good football, but if we're not getting the points, then it's clearly not working. And you think, well, that's such a black and white thing to look at. It shouldn't be too much more grey than that, but there are other things that do come into it. And with us, I feel that we can defend well, we can play the midfield very well, and it's been a season-long, it's probably been a two-season-long issue that we do not have the striker. I mean, some of our shooting is just abysmal. You know, just even if a third of the chances that we'd have had have gone in, or a third more of the chances we'd had have gone in, we wouldn't be sitting here looking over our shoulders saying, oh, that's awfully close to the drop there. So... and it's just that our running looks, you know, pretty awful. You know, we've got a run of home games that is, you know, you City, you know, in whatever you City, United, I think we've got an Arsenal,
yeah.
So, you know, a run of games which is, you know, it's only home games, which is, it's not that pretty.
Yeah, your March is particularly tough, isn't it? Away trips to Wolves and Leicester as well, which I guess makes this game against Crystal Palace, your old foes, even bigger next week. It's a home game. I'm sure the crowd will be up for it. But, I mean, three points there will really help own it in terms of, you know, looking at what you've got to follow.
Absolutely. It certainly will. I mean, we haven't done ourselves justice against those teams that are below us still. Palace. Because let's face it, this is one of those games where, because when we played recently, we played against Villa, and we played against Norwich, and Bournemouth and Southampton. We needed the points, and you know, a draw is better for us than it is for them. But you know, dear God, a win would have been so much better. But in this instance, Palace are kind of mid-table; they're not going down. We need the points more than them. But you know, this is a derby game, and the odd thing is again, up at Selhurst Park early this season, we spent so much of the time in their half. We were so much better than them. And yet, we could not score. We got one goal. It was a great goal. But, you know, it's just the finishing. It drives me mad as to how professional footballers just refuse to learn how to shoot. That's the main thing, is that looking at all those fixtures coming up, it doesn't matter how well or how badly you play. If you can't shoot, you're not going to win.
I mean, did
I come across as a tad frustrated?
A little bit. I mean, yeah. Look, there's nothing worse than doing, as you say, watching you know, so much good play, and then go to waste
ends up in Rose Ed. Yeah.
So frustration is allowed, Alan. Frustration is allowed. But generally speaking, sort of how is the mood kind of in Brighton in terms of for the team? Is the optimism that the Brighton can stay up? Is the general feeling that, you know, everyone is doing sort of everything they can to make that happen?
I think so. I mean, I do get fed up. I mean, and again, we're back to the fickle fans and the trolls on the internet saying, you know, this is, I mean, you get people saying this is the worst Brighton side I've seen forever. And you think, well, yeah. And some people get fed up of us going on about Hereford and 97 and Fans United and all that sort of thing. And hang on, this is four divisions below. This is 90 places below. You know, if you want awful football, mate, then, you know, you can't even start with that. So I think there is optimism that we can do it, and I genuinely think that there is too much poor football below us for us to go down, but we can't rely on that. I mean, we did that last time and it was so close. And if actually Palace hadn't beaten Cardiff on the second to last day of the season, we're moving down now. There's an irony. So it's I think what it is that the fear is that we've been here before, and our point is, how come we've ended up here again? And then you get the people saying, well, if it can't be Graham Potter, it can't be Chris Hughton, then they say Sam Allardyce in, at which point you think, yeah, just go away.
You want to be able to enjoy your Saturday afternoons. I know you do. You thanks to Alan for joining us. I'll be watching that game at the weekend with interest now. It's a big one, as I say, Brighton against Crystal Palace. It's the 12:30 on Saturday as well, so it will be on telly. So I would recommend everyone kind of watch that, and we'll see if Brighton can do the business. But yeah, huge thanks to Alan. And obviously, all the other callers who've joined us for this coach home. We'll be back next week. Sports Social Podcast Network.